Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics, such as
Kate Bishop, aka Hawkeye, on the new Disney Plus series. Honestly, like, the chemistry she had with a certain someone that was in Black Widow was, like, palpable. Like, it was there, and everyone saw it. Like, everyone saw it, and still, they did not make it a fishies. I guess maybe they're building up. I don't know. I'm gonna give it a second, but gay as fuck. Go ahead on, Hailee Steinfeld.
Season two, we're waiting for you. Come on, be gay.
What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? Was good
stuff. Yeah.
You're like, not much. Anyway,
it snowed in like LA yesterday, or hailed, really, I guess, which is very concerning. But
global warming is real.
Yeah,
I'm telling you,
it wasn't.
This shit is weird.
It was up in like higher areas, you know, like mountainous areas. So like not anywhere near me, but still, it's weird.
Yeah, no, the world's on fire. The whole world doesn't do what it's supposed to be doing. I mean, I guess it is. It's reacting naturally to us being on Earth. So it's just, it is what it is, and it's happening sooner than we thought. But yeah, depressing news aside. Did you see that there's like an America Chavez, like, spoiler hint thing in the, oh, fuck, the trailer?
The new Doctor Strange thing?
Yes, she's in it. Did you see that?
I mean, I saw the trailer a couple of months ago, yeah, or like a month ago, where like they have her, the back of her jacket.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about it. She's probably like the best fucking Marvel character that exists.
Period.
You know,
period.
Says a bitch facts. That loves DC, but yeah, she's fantastic. They've already cast her and stuff. A lot of people actually were upset that it wasn't an Afro-Latina, but...
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we're gonna give it a chance. I mean, we know how these things go, though. Like, we know, like, colorism isn't gonna go away tomorrow or next week or next year. Like, it's a constant thing that's happening in all media. So but you know, happy Black History Month, I guess.
Like, I what know. The fuck. God, it's like so easy to see the obvious and how fucked up it is that they don't, you know, there's not enough recognition for Black History Month, and them getting the shortest month of the year, it's just, yeah.
Trash, garbage, basura.
If you're monetarily sound, donate to an organization, you know, do something.
A mutual aid fund.
Curse anywhere. Out your racist grandpa, something.
Yeah, do something. Like, don't let people talk shit. Start there. Just, like, start educating your family. Step one. Did you hear about this craziness with this, like, former Dolphins Miami coach, Brian Flores? He's suing the NFL for, like, racial bias.
I did not hear about that. The extent of my football knowledge is the Super Bowl.
No, I understand. No, I gotcha. I mean, it's just, to me, it's more like...
A political thing, sure.
Yeah, it's like a small person, you know, speaking and challenging power itself. And I think that's interesting. And the NFL even hired, like a black... lawyer. She's like she's something high up in the world, and I think that's interesting that they hired a black attorney to go against to be their defense counsel, basically. I think that's interesting, and it's a big fuck you to Afro-Latinos and all people of color in America, as per usual. Even though, you know, there's this completely like black halftime show, they're like actively oppressing black people. I think that's obvious there. I mean, I didn't watch the Super Bowl because I was watching the other Super Bowl, but and it didn't turn out to be nothing but more trauma. So shout out to, I guess, Euphoria. Oh, at least I don't think, yeah, I saw a dick this time, so shout out to that as well.
Yeah, LA is definitely showing its ass because it's been doing all these things to, like, hide the fact that they built this giant stadium in an area where there's a, you know, a large homeless population and all these other things. Yep. And they've been like shipping freaking homeless people to like hospitals to hold for, like for the weekend, just doing all kinds of things, proving that they have resources and refuse to use them. And then doing a halftime show full of every ancient millennial's faves, and, you know, basically acting like they're like Black Lives Matter, like, and amazing and all these other things. I'm like, no, dude, you're literally screwing over the people of Inglewood.
Yeah, I mean, screwing over like an extremely vulnerable population, and for what, you know, like money. Like, yes. I think someone said that they the Super Bowl generated enough money to end like at least like hunger in like California, and yet
yeah,
there's like all these billionaires in there right now, well, on Sunday, just hanging out, kicking it. And I think them in a room could solve not even like what the Super Bowl generated, but just the amount of billionaires and millionaires present could have like ended hunger, ended homelessness in Los Angeles themselves, you know, like had they all just decided, hey, let's have a conversation, you know.
And I was going back to like environmental shit too, the amount of like jets that flew in and out of LA that day absolutely fucked the, and probably why it fucking snowed, honestly. That alone, the impact.
Yeah, the putting the ozone, making the ozone hole a lot bigger, and for what? Just for like to be, you know, entertained. It's like modern day Rome, you know, like they built these coliseums so to entertain the people so that they would just be entertained and leave them alone to destroy the country. I mean, we know everything is like a mode of control and oppression, religion, all of this, sports, entertainment even is a mode of distraction to distract us from what we don't have. So fun times, fun topics here at CYC only. Yeah, it's gotten dark really fast. I don't want to do that. So did you know that Mrs. Maisel comes out on Friday? I'm super, season 4 of Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime. Speaking of devils and evil.
I did not know because I have never seen the show, if I'm being honest.
You know what? Them bitches gay. They should be gay. I think.
Are they not? I thought they were.
No, I mean, they're not, but I see the end. I feel like they have a lot of chemistry together, whether it's friendship or not. Like, they still have a lot of really good energy and they connect, so it's gay to me in my mind, and that's what keeps me watching. Also, it's just really good writing and acting, so can't get mad at it.
Speaking of good writing and acting, there's a new show out called Promised Land that doesn't have either, and it's
what?
It's already one of those like network TV shows that about halfway through got moved to finish out its season on Hulu. You know how they do that to shows sometimes?
Wow.
Of course, it's 90% of the time it happens to shows with people of color. And this particular show is about a family of, you know, Latinos that kind of like takes over this like very like white, wealthy wine vineyard.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
Yeah.
Did not watch it.
Yeah, so I mean, there's really cool people on it, and they have queer characters, and they're doing a lot of things that we kind of look for. The writing's not the best, and the acting's not the best. So it's, you know, and also no one's talking about it. It has no press, you know, as it always goes with Latinx shows. It's just like another one that's going down the drain, and this happens. I feel like this happens every year. If not every, like, season.
Literally, I feel like there's always someone trying to make a show, like, centering Latina people in the United States, and that it just never goes. Like, and, you know, Latina people make, like, a huge, like, population that watch TV and like to be entertained, but I understand the disconnect, though, because I think overall, like, our people... What people? Fuck people. Anyways, Latina people, like, I think they generally see, like, supporting other Latina people, like, as corny. And there's always, like, this sense of, like, rejecting themselves, I guess, in order to, like, maybe establish, like, the status quo, to, like, go with, like,
this show to a T. You've never even seen it, but you're, like, literally describing what this show is doing, right? Because it's literally, like, the ultimate form of assimilation that happens in this show.
Oh,
and it's like, no. How like they've turned into like not the best people.
Wow. Yeah, I don't want to watch that though. Yeah, I must agree. I don't want to watch that. Like, I'm good on that. There's enough of that in Texas. Like, oof, the reality that that's hitting. Like, I don't. But I mean, maybe I'll watch it. It's on Hulu now. Yeah. You said, right?
I mean, it was on Hulu. It's been on Hulu this entire time, but now it's like not on network TV anymore. But
gotcha.
Yeah.
Just on Hulu. Dear God.
Exactly.
That's sad. I mean, I wish people would watch Acapulco. Like, that's what I want people to watch. Like,
yeah. It's like, but it's ugh, like a different life that streaming shows live than network shows, because network shows are like, you know, ABC, Fox, well, like all those shows are very like determined by the middle of America. And
that's true.
Like, but good, you know, there are some good things that come from it, right? Look at Abbott Elementary. Abbott Elementary is killing the fucking game.
Yo, yeah, if you guys want to watch something for Black History Month, watch Abbott Elementary.
Support.
No trauma. No trauma involved.
No, yeah, support them. They're amazing. Yeah, the perfect, like, type
of...
Shout
out to my short queen, Quinta. Yeah. We're both the same height, so...
Quinta's the best and just clearly the most fucking talented human. I'm glad to see how much support is coming out for Abbott Elementary. Like, that'll give somebody some hope, you know what I mean? Like, that, it's very, very heartwarming.
I think it's because, like, people watch it in community. You know, like, when things come out every week, people, like, create this community around it. Like, there's Abbott Elementary that comes on TV, and there's Abbott Elementary for people that have Hulu.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a whole thing on Twitter. Like, people watch together in community. And I think when you build that up, it's easy and people are gonna just love it and buy into it. Like, and I feel like that's like the beauty of like Quinta's been on the internet, so she's been had an internet base of like, you know, fans.
She does.
Her Millie Rock, yeah. Her BuzzFeed days, like she's cool with Zach Fox and Thundercat. Like, there's this very strong internet presence with her, and at the same time she's managed to reach middle America, which that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I mean, it's also nice that, like, unlike Euphoria, which I know Euphoria is a very successful show too, but sometimes mm-hmm. Euphoria feels very like plucked out of Twitter, and Abbott Elementary is not that whatsoever, right? It's not like doused in internet culture. It's just funny and it's just good.
Yeah, Abbott Elementary feels kind of, it reminds me of like Parks and Rec. It reminds me of like The Good Place. It has that kind of like really sweet center to it that I think, yeah, like Ted Lasso, like shows like that, like it's pretty rare and to have it and like connect and for it to be like mainstream, and also for it to just, I mean, I think all those shows have that in common. They have that sweetness to it, which I think we all need right now. Anything that's sweet. And Euphoria, I don't know why it got so popular on the internet, because I feel like everybody was already watching it, but they said they only grew in numbers. So I guess people were bored during quarantine. I don't know.
I mean, it's being inundated in this like memeage and like all this conversation is wanting, it's FOMO, right? You want to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, I think maybe they're just like paying people to like make memes on the internet at this point, like, and to get people talking about it, because on TikTok, like,
it's, I have pretty to just keep scrolling. Like, TikTok, yeah. It's overwhelmingly Euphoria, yeah.
They have to be paying them. They have to be like, yo, here's, get $100, talk about Euphoria, go. Like, there has to be something like that happening, because it's a little ridiculous, and it's not that good. In fact, I hate watch it at this point.
Really? Interesting.
I watch it for Zendaya and Zendaya alone, and Lexi and Fez, three people, and everyone else I'm tired of, and I wish they'd all just leave the show, but whatever. Like TikTok said, you're not watching it the right way. You got to watch it like a reality TV show. It's just mess.
Yeah. So. Yeah, which I was getting to that point when it got to the episode before last. I was like, I'm just going to watch it like it's funny, because it's starting to piss me off. And then it was like the best episode / hardest episode of the season. And I was like, well, so much for that. But...
Yeah, like, it, I mean, they said that was the best episode, though, so I have no hope in the rest of the season. I'm like, yeah, that shit was a movie. Everything else is,
yeah.
Meh.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Oh, but speaking of better shows, y'all should really watch Somebody Somewhere. I know you told me that you weren't feeling the first episode, but I think if you keep watching it, you're going to find that sweetness that I'm talking about. Like, that's in Ted Lasso and in Abbott Elementary. It's called Somebody Somewhere. It's on HBO Max.
It does seem beautiful. Awesome. And has a lot of things that I want we to both love like. It for. Yeah, so I think I will give it another shot. I just was like, I have had a shit show of a month and haven't really gotten around to it. But yeah, you're right. I should give it another shot.
Yeah, I mean, it has like a thick lead, like a fat lead, which is rare. I love to see it because it's not like she's not talking about her fatness. That's like people will make comments to her, but she blows it off like a real person would. And she keeps being a bad bitch. And she stands in that. And I think her finding that in the season, you're going to see that, like, I mean, we see it. It's right there. She's a bad bitch. But I think she needs to remind herself. And I think, you know, finding, like, this queer family, like, that's also very beautiful and the things we stand for. So I think that's why you should really give it a shot, because it only gets more beautiful and complicated as the show goes on. And, you know, the character is dealing with grief and she's trying to find her place back in the world after still grieving and knowing that that never goes away. But she's still finding, you know, love and life, and she's discovering that again. And I think that's really beautiful. So I say give it a shot for all those reasons.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Shall we get started?
Let's do it. What are we talking about today?
After you, madame, but I will be talking about The Fallout, an HBO Max film.
Ooh. And I'm going to be talking about another HBO Max. This is like our HBO Max episode. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I hate what this show is called. The Secret Sex Lives of College Girls.
Is it called The Secret?
Or I think it's Sex Lives.
I think it's just The Sex Lives of College Girls.
It's just so gross to me. Like, it's so unnecessarily salacious. Like, call it anything else. But, like, really, you can think to call it something else.
Yeah, they definitely want it to be, like, you know, very eye-grabbing title, and you're gonna get the leftover Sex in the City like fans, you know, like that's what I get.
I guess like they're introducing like a younger demographic to Sex in the City. This is their version. Yeah, and you're correct, it is called The Sex Lives of College Girls. I love this show, and I was surprised that I like this show. And it's kind of rare for me to like a show like this, I feel, because it gives me the freeform feeling, but like a little bit better acting. It reminds me of like, because what I found really beautiful about this show, before I get into anything else, is that, oh my God, they're age appropriate. Like, we're not obsessing about teenage girls. I mean, even though these characters are 18, that still feels a little weird, but whatever. At least they're focusing on college-aged women versus a teenage, high school, underage girls. So right there is a win for content for me, because as someone who's always obsessing about the fact that I'm tired of watching children do things that like are not childlike, I know it happens, I just don't want to see it, you know? Like, yeah, that's fine. It's like that. I know
they're taking these like young, like they're over 18 actors, right, even in these teenage shows, but now they're being like, no, like they're over 18. Like, they're over 18. They're in college doing college things.
Yes, like, finally, like, an age-appropriate show about, like, to explore. I mean, there's so much to explore there, and they do a fantastic job of exploring that. So shout-out to Mindy Kaling. She is a co-creator for the show. Justin Noble and her created the show, which, I mean, shout-out to her. She is putting, actually, diverse, like, shows on the market. Her other show's on Netflix, and it's a teenage girl show. That's fine, that's cute. She gave us something a little raunchier, something a little bit more, I don't know, complicated in this show, and I really like what it's doing. Shout out to, I'm gonna just say everyone, the main characters that are in this. Kimberly Finkel is like this nerdy girl from the Midwest, from Arizona. Arizona is more like the Southwest. And it's played by Pauline Chalamet. You may know her as Chalamet, Timothy Shampoo's sister. But she's doing a fantastic job in this, and I didn't know they were related at all until someone else pointed it out. So shout out to her. Shout out to Amrit Kaur. You know what? I apologize, girl. I'm gonna say that right one day. She plays Bella Mahorta. She is the Southeast Asian girl of the group. She's far from the nerd. She is the comedian of the group. She's the funny girl. And she is. She's hilarious. And she's basically Mindy Kaling's character. I don't know.
She's also, like, funny on purpose. You know what I mean? Like, all of them are kind of funny, but yes. She's, like, actually, like, literally. I think, like, yeah, she's very much the kid Mindy Kaling character in the fact that she's going to school to try to be a comedian, you know?
And, yeah, she's, like, funny on purpose, like you said. She's making jokes. She's extroverted. She's joining all of these, like, comedy writing groups so that she can be successful one day. And her story is very interesting because she is definitely, like, a sex-positive, like, funny girl. And she's... Every character in the show is pretty three-dimensional. They're fully fleshed-out characters, and I think that's really interesting. The next is Renee Rapp. She plays Leighton Murray, the queer girl, the gay girl.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
Spoiler alert. But she's kind of like the Legally Blonde character. She's kind of like the blonde, rich, white girl from a conservative family. And it tells her story, and we'll get into that later. And she's doing an awesome job. I think she played like Regina George on Broadway. So that's another interesting thing about her.
Fantastic. And then we actor.
They're all amazing. Yeah. I think all of them are just doing a wonderful job. I think her name's Aaliyah Chanel Scott, plays Whitney Chase. In any other show, we would have thought the athlete would be the gay one.
I thought she was gay. I thought she was. I was
convinced. Don't you love? They subvert all of these tropes. They're like, okay, Southeast Asian girl, not the nerd. the athlete, not gay. Like
conservative, not straight. Yeah.
Yeah, I love this. And they play with that. She's a congresswoman's daughter, and she's making bad choices like everybody else. But I found her refreshing, and I found her character, like, I liked it. Yeah. I liked her character. I did, you know, there wasn't like a lot of stereotype in it. And that's what I'm looking for like stereotypes and like bullshit. And this show does a lovely job of like turning all of that on its head. Yeah. And they make fun of it. And I love that. There's this constant conversation about class, sexism, racism, fucking homophobia. Like, they go there all the time, and it's funny every time. So I think that's a really like powerful thing to be able to do every episode, and it doesn't feel like after school specially,
right? Like, yeah.
I'm not watching something that ends in the more you know, like it's lovely. And then let's get into like three more people that I love. They're side characters, but they're my favorite side characters, and then my favorite period. There's Midori Francis, who plays Alicia. She is the young lady running the Women's Center, openly queer young lady running the Women's Center. We'll get into that later. I'm going to hate myself because I'm Latina and I can't fucking say this name. Lia Isorelis Paulino plays Lila.
Lila.
And fucking MVP. She's the best character.
MVP of the entire series.
She's the best character, right?
Yeah, which, like, this is a half-hour comedy. Like, that's what it is. And yet, mm-hmm. like, when she was on screen making her jokes, even though I think the show's funny and I think it's good, only time I laughed out loud was with her on screen.
She's, like, she's constantly stealing the scene. Like, you see her and you're like, I only see you, girl. Like, I don't know what she's going to do in the future, but I'm going to watch it because she's amazing. Like, any scene she's in, you're, like, hypnotized by her. You're just like, this bitch's charisma, her presence is crazy. And, you know, I'll watch her in anything, and they need to cast her more.
Literally, yeah.
And then she's the best. I love anything. Anytime she has something to say, it's great. And then Christopher Meyer, who plays Kanan. Am I saying that right, Kanan? Yes. He plays Kanan. He's the love interest. He also works in the coffee shop with Lila and Kimberly. And I love their dynamic because it feels like, I don't know, true to like people who work, you know, people, yeah. There's
the intro scene with Lila and with Kanan, when they meet Kimberly is one of the best scenes in the whole thing because like,
yep.
She's trying so hard to be like, cool and like, you know, liberal and the opposite of probably where she comes from, and they're just like, yep, chill the fuck out. And they fuck with her, and it's funny. Yep. It's good.
They like play into her stereotypes of who they are.
Right.
And they fuck with her, and it's fantastic because that is the truth. Like, they automatically make these assumptions about you, other people, based on, you know, just your race, just like your ethnicity. And I love that the show goes for it. They really talk about class. They really talk about racism and just like casually, you know, and it's funny. And I think like more shows should take like, you know, notes, because they want to do this, but it just feels so like, you know, after school special, like, yeah. Irk. Don't like it. But to get into the queerness of the show and why I'm revealing this is Layton and Alicia meet at the Women's Center and things take off from there. I like their dynamic. I like what they were doing. They were interesting and then they also weren't, you know, like they weren't maybe my favorite dynamic on the show, honestly. Yeah. But I do like that they're having that conversation. I do like that they are making fun of queerness in a very real way. That it, I mean, it doesn't feel like an assault. It doesn't feel like trauma based. It's just like funny. It's
poking fun. Yeah. Like some of the stuff is kind of like a lot sometimes, you know, like, but it, yeah, it's good. What I kind of, why I was really okay with it being very like closeted type of like, this is kind of a story that comes out of like the 2000s, right? Like, I'm in the closet, yep, I won't come out. Whereas nowadays, every single show you see, and everybody's so openly and so proud of being gay, and like, and that's great too. Like, I love that, you know, like that work, yeah, when queerness is not a big deal. That's something I'm gonna talk about a little bit later. But sometimes it's still a big deal. Sometimes it is, especially, you know, in her circles.
Yeah, and like, what is interesting about this is that they're really touching on intersectionality, on this character who's wealthy, who's white, who's a woman, and she's confronted by the complete opposite in Alicia, you know? And I think those are honest depictions of where people are, you know? Like you said, most shows are just kind of like, I'm out and I've always been out and I'm waving the pride flag. But these characters are in direct contradiction to each other, you know, like she's like this Legally Blonde character and she's having to confront her whiteness, she's having to confront, you know, the racism that comes with all of that. When Alicia goes to a party, she's immediately confronted by this frat boy, whereas Layton has never had that, you know, happen to her because she's, you know, a femme presenting white girl, so the world treats her as such, and that's a very distinct place in American society versus like, you know, openly queer person of color, and they're not rich, you know, there's just so much on the other side of that. And I feel like those polar opposites meeting is a pretty cool way to talk about intersectionality and how this character is having to confront the fact that she's, you know, if she does come out as queer, she just has to kind of give up her place in society as this rich white girl, and she kind of doesn't, you know, that's the thing about it, is that she would never give that up, she would always have privilege in the world, but I think she's not even open to confronting that part of her, and I think that's interesting. I hope they explore that more in season two, because Alicia's character is like polar opposite, she's, you know, a bad bitch, but she's also more butch, she's also more like, and she can't help it, she's a person of color, she's butch, she's the complete opposite of what the male gaze is in America, and I wish they would explore her character more, but I understand why that, I mean, maybe that'll happen in season two more, but I don't know. And Layton is this character who's emotionally and in every way repressed, and I think that's interesting, where she doesn't want to be labeled as anything, but at the same time, she's cutting herself off from so much. She's like this cold human being who's just so closed off, and getting to see her develop like friendships even, because this character is so closed off at the beginning, and towards the end, at least she makes friends. So she's making a step in the right direction to open herself up. And that's what I'm saying, like this show does really good job at writing these characters, because they are fully developed humans. And there's so much there that I'm actually more interested in. But shout out to this gay character they wrote, and they, you know, wrote the queer community in here very well, because yeah, a lot of women-centered or femme-centered things can be a little hippy-dippy, you know, they can be a little, you know, a lot sometimes, but you know, we love our people, but damn, like, that shit a little hippy-dippy sometimes, and I'm glad that they openly discuss that. But
yeah, what'd you think? It just feel like a different world, right? When she's stepping into it, she's like, she doesn't fit in, you know, at least at first. So yeah, it was really cool to see. I actually, one of my favorite storylines, and the way that they went about it, was them talking about sexism in the comedy world, even when it comes down to like being in college, right? Bella
and the racism,
absolutely. But like sexual assault too, you know what I mean? Like it goes to a whole other level, but that whole storyline I thought was like treated really interestingly, right? It's not as easy as like reporting. It's not as easy as this or that, and it affects people different people differently. So definitely check it out if anything for that. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that episode where, and we're talking about the same episode. My favorite episode is the same one you just mentioned, where they confront racism, sexism, class. All in the same episode.
Yeah, and it's not like, and they're sitting there like spot. They're not sitting there pontificating, right? Like, this is a whole plot line that was set up throughout all these episodes. Yeah,
and well done. And they also talk about sexism in sports. Like they're talking about so much, and they're managing it so well. Like that one episode where Kimberly sees her, you know, her fellow workers, and there's this sense of class solidarity that she has with them in that moment, because she sees people working an event that she, honestly, she should probably be working it too, you know, get some money out of it. But instead she's, you know, maxing out her credit card to go to this party, this comedian alumni association thing with her friend. And where her friend is also getting fucking, she's having to deal with like fucking racism and sexism in comedy, where this guy, this cis white dude, is talking shit or putting down her the woman perspective, the female perspective, whatever that means. I hate when people use the word female, but and that's the same episode. So I'm like, this show is doing so much, and it's balancing it so well, and like, shout out to everybody, because it takes a lot. And the show is pretty raunchy. I don't recommend watching it with your mom. Don't do that shit. I know y'all watch things with your family. Don't do that. There's a lot of straight sex in this, and not a lot of queer anything, but lots of just naked straight people everywhere, which I didn't need so much of that, but okay.
it was a little excessive. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I was a little excessive that one episode. I was like, are y'all gonna keep doing, okay, it hasn't stopped, all right, straight people, I don't need it from the gay people either, just, you know, y'all ain't gotta do it this much. But anyways, I love the show. I think it's doing a lot of things, and I think it's cool. I think it's like if Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants was like better written, you know, like
if it wasn't a movie and was a comedy about college girls. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, there are no like Latina characters that are main characters. Like Lila's there, but you know, there's no America Ferrera, you know, but I'll take it. You
Lila
know?
As a main character would be too powerful.
They wouldn't even know what to do with her. They should write her own show. I'd watch it.
Yeah, sometimes I felt like when I was watching, I was like, she just makes up her own lines. So
she delivers them so well. Like, I'm telling you, she's so charismatic. Like, I'll watch her in anything.
Yes.
But yeah, so let me wrap this up before I keep talking in circles. I'm going to give this show 4 pan dulces. And just because they don't have Lila talking every episode, all the time, forever. that's my own bias, of course. And also for all the straight sex that, I mean, come on. We don't need too much of that. Like, we see it. We know it. It's there. Great. We don't need all of it all the time. And then the gay girls don't even get the same kind of energy. But, you know, this 4 pan dulces for me, it would be perfect. But, you know, Lila should, you know, be in the whole show the whole time. But, you know, you can't have everything.
Yeah.
What about you?
For me, it could be funnier. I would say, like,
yeah,
it has its moments mm-hmm. where it is funny, but it almost feels like it could be a better drama than a comedy.
Yeah.
And they didn't lean into that. Obviously, they leaned into the comedy part of it. And I understand what they're doing with it, but it's just, like, not as funny as it could be. But it's a very interesting story, very watchable for me. A lot of people fall off on the first episode, and I understand why. Because you want it to be funnier. But if you stick with it, it's worth it, you know? So, like, have a casito.
Yeah, there's a lot of heart to the show. So, there's a lot happening there that's actually kind of warm and fuzzy. So, it's cute. I like it.
Yeah.
But anyways, on to the less cute and fluffy.
This was a lot harder to watch. As you'll come to find out if you listen, especially if you listen to this whole review. Personally, I'm going to tell you guys off the bat, like, you should know that it's very difficult to watch. It's very traumatic. It's very heavy. It's also incredibly beautiful, and I think that it's worth it if you can get through something like that. And it's also very easily spoiled, but also not spoiled spoilery at all. It's kind of hard to spoil something like this because it's about an experience and emotions. So I'm talking about The Fallout, which we already mentioned earlier. It premiered at South by Southwest in 2021, but is streaming on HBO as of January 2022. It was written and directed by Megan Park. This is her first feature, you know, directorial debut. And even though she's Canadian, she's written about a very American experience. And she was in a TV series called The Secret Life of the American Teenager. So I guess she has some American merit there.
Oh, yeah. She does know about Americans.
She's actually, like, she's an actor. You know what I mean? Like, she's been in a lot of things and acted for years and years and years. But it's not unheard of for actors to start writing, because what do they do all day? They read and analyze scripts. So at mm-hmm. some point, they're probably craving a certain kind of story, as well as they have a really good idea of what a great script looks like. So what a great script looks like. So she wrote one, and it's fantastic. For a first-timer, like, this is incredible. It stars Jenna Ortega, who has been on everyone's radar for a while now. She was in the latest Scream film. She was in Yes Day, You. She was young Jane on Jane the Virgin. Like, you know her for something. And if you've been watching all of those things like I have, you'll recognize that she's an incredible actor. And in The Fallout, she's Veda Cavill. That's the main character. She's a high school student who goes through a very traumatic event. When I saw this movie for the first time, I didn't know anything about it, like, nothing. Which is why I'm not saying exactly what happened, because maybe that's the experience that you want to have too, but it is very traumatizing, so you've been warned. But with that said, I'm going to get into it, and slowly but surely it'll start to get spoilery, so now you know. There's no, like, surprising plot twist or mystery or anything like that in this, right? Like, this is about a kid who is nearby when a shooter starts firing at students at her high school. And she's so close to this that she's probably pretty sure, like, she's going to be killed. But she survives. And with that comes, like, so much damage and so many heavy feelings that she has to navigate. And with this movie, like, you're seeing that there's no blueprint for grief. You know, you hear about, like, the stages of grief, and, like, maybe there's some truth to them, but everyone is different and goes on their different paths. So what I love about this movie, as much as it hurts, is, like, its willingness to accept that grief doesn't really go away. And it also really heavily critiques the way that this country deals with gun control without being some big PSA. It's also impressive to me personally because it was shot in, like, less than 2 months in 2020. So that's wild to me, considering, like, how well done and, like, the talent in this movie. But basically, yeah, the school shooting happens at the beginning of the film. There's not, like, a lead up or suspense. It happens the way it happens in real life. It's unexpected. It's tragic. It's on a seemingly normal day with just kids being kids. And I won't go into super detail, but basically Veda is in the bathroom when this happens with another student named Mia. Mia is played by Maddie Ziegler, who you might recognize her from, like, the dancer from all of Sia's music videos. And they're mostly strangers at the beginning of the movie, but then they have this experience together and they have to run into a stall and like climb up on the toilet and hide. Then they're later joined by another kid named Quentin, who has his own unimaginable experience because of his little brother being killed in this, and he's there to witness that. And I mention all of this because after all this is over, Veda's at home with her family, who desperately want to help her and be there for her, but they weren't there, and they're never going to understand. And the only people that are going to understand are people like Mia and Quentin, who become a comfort to her. And I think, like, people that are outside of that grief, in those moments, they have a tendency to, like, ask a lot of questions and try to be reassuring, saying things are going to get better. But, like, she doesn't want that, you know? When she's with Mia, for example, they can just be. They can just exist with, like, this quiet knowledge that they're not okay. And, you know, grieve in their own way. Like, Veda's grief, it's very avoidant. She's avoiding her emotions. She's running away from her family. She's terrified of using the school bathroom, so she's avoiding that. And she acts out a lot with drugs and alcohol. And, like, this is not all because of a teenage rebellion. It's because she's trying to find a way to deal with her new normal and, like, her emotions that she doesn't want to feel. Mm. Mia, on the other side, was, like, isolating in her house. She won't leave her house. It's a very nice house because she has wealthy parents who are away in Europe, so she's also very lonely when her friendship with Veda begins. And she's also an influencer who, like, doesn't have any friends for a number of reasons, and I'll get back to all this, but but Quentin, who lost his little brother in the shooting, you know, has a whole different version of the trauma, because he's able to connect with his family and be there for his family more than Veda is, because his family does know some of that trauma, right? Like, he is able to connect because they're all sharing in, like, this awful loss. So he's dealing with that his own way. And then there's Veda's best friend, Nick, who she also kind of runs away from during all of this. He's coping through activism. And he's taking on this, like, heavy role by becoming the face of this movement, something that Veda has a hard time dealing with because she doesn't want to accept all of this stuff, right? And then lastly, there's Veda's little sister, whose name's Amelia. She's very close with Veda up until the shooting, and she desperately wants her sister back. A big part of grief that I wish they had touched on more is guilt. There's, like, survivor's guilt, and in Amelia's case, it's guilt because she thinks she's the reason Veda was in the bathroom in the first place during that time. That's part of the beginning of the story. But, yeah, guilt, that comes with, I mean, maybe not always, but it comes with losing people and comes with grief. But Veda ends up going to therapy, where Shailene Woodley makes an appearance.
Oh, God. we're old.
Yeah. And then, so she's pretty closed off to therapy. She doesn't want to do it. So she kind of still has to spiral. She turns to many substances to get through her days. She also turns to Mia, who becomes really attached to Veda, and it's pretty mutual. And then Mia, you know, she's a woman of few words. So,
yeah.
So there's, like, a point when Veda, after smoking a lot of weed, and, you know, is very clearly going through something of her own, she's prodding her for information. You know, Mia still, being the woman of few words, she doesn't actually say anything, but she looks at Veda, and Veda understands, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, that unspoken vibes there, that there's, like, these strong feelings between them, and whether it's the grief or whether it's, like, the companionship, whatever it is between them, like, you know, they end up physically intimate. And it's actually just really sweet, I think, you know, because they're, like, they have this, like, very odd friendship, you know, like, people that would have never been friends outside of this, but then they connect and they, like, are each other's yin yang, I guess, in a way, you know, like, polar opposites.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. They do. They do once you see them interact, you know? Like, one girl who talks a lot and the other one who doesn't talk at all. But they need each other in these moments. And it's really, like, a beautiful thing because they're connecting, and it's not even, I feel like it's not even like a sexual thing, right? It's just a emotional thing. And it's, I think that's, it's probably, it scares them a lot, I think, but it was still nice to see in the show, right? It's never like, oh, am I gay? Like, nothing like that. There's no even mention of it until later when she's talking to her mom and she's like, oh, don't worry, I won't get pregnant. Which is funny to me, but this is like that moment, which is, I guess, in a way kind of serves as the climax of the film, you know, because after that it's kind of downhill because it's followed by a literal and emotional hangover after she ends up staying the night there by accident, and she gets home to find her family just worried sick. She's caught in a lie immediately, and this kind of leads to her personal rock bottom, right, where she once again tries to deal with it by being reckless and like trying to hook up with Quentin, who's like, no, like, I'm going through stuff, and he's probably dealing
with it. He's emotionally healthy.
Right.
He's healthy.
So, yeah, with more time and more experimental coping, she kind of gets to a place where she's dealing with what's happened. She opens up to her parents again, and those moments are, like, they're actually, like, kind of, like, some of them are funny, you know? It lets you, like, realize what's on the other side of things, but, yeah, she opens up to her parents, to her sister, and then finally makes some progress in therapy, and we're all kind of, like, feeling this sigh of relief. She's in, like, a good place with Mia. It's very platonic, but, you know, she's in a good place with herself. And she's, like, sitting, waiting for Mia to come out. And then she gets this notification on her phone about another school shooting. And she immediately has a panic attack. And then that's how the film ends, right? And, I mean, that ending has many meanings. But the obvious one being that these school shootings are never going to stop if there's no actions taken towards serious gun control. And it says all of that without saying all of that, which is amazing. And then another one is about grief, where you have moments and time periods that you're doing better and you're living your life. And then in a moment, like, something can remind you of what you went through, and it's like no time has passed, and it just puts you back there.
You know, they said there's like a new theory on grief. They said that the five stages of grief aren't necessarily for the people that are grieving. It's mainly, they said that one theory is that it's about the person who's experiencing the trauma versus the people who are having like a loved one pass or something. It's usually the person that's passing is going through the five stages of grief, and everyone else, they say that like grief doesn't go away. Like, that's a new theory, is that like there is no like five stages. It's just
grief. That's where I'm like, the five stages might be part of the experience, but it's not like you experience the five stages and then they stop.
Yeah.
They just don't, the grief doesn't go away. It doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So this movie was incredible in that, when the way that it portrayed all of that. And yeah, very, very relatable stuff too for anybody that's lost people, you know. So yeah, I give this,
heavy.
I give this like no cafecitos. I've watched it 3 times now. It's probably my favorite movie in, I can't even say how long, I don't know, maybe ever. But it's, you know, that could very well just be where I am at in life. But yeah, it's absolutely fantastic, and it's fun, just like so surprising how this movie even came to be because of this actor who's never even had a movie before. But very good, good job, Megan Park. Very amazing.
I mean, it's the, like, plot wise there isn't like a lot happening in the movie, but acting wise character development wise it's about a lot of emotions versus plot lines, and at the end of the day you're really watching like Jenna Ortega act her ass off. Like, even Maddie Ziegler's character is doing something very specific, and the energy is still there, that she's still acting her ass off too, because there's a lot of like, there's like a kinetic energy to both of them that isn't, you're acting your ass off at that point, right? Like, there's just a lot between them, and none of it's really verbalized by Maddie Ziegler's character. And I think that's interesting, because it's a lot of like body acting, a lot of like face acting. They're incredible. I didn't think either of them would be I just didn't expect what I got from either of those actors. They're just amazing. And they're asking a lot of them emotionally throughout this entire movie, and they're knocking it out of the park every time. So I was really impressed.
Yeah.
5 panuzas for me as well. But I don't know if I could watch... I don't know if I could watch the whole thing through ever again. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, that was great. I don't know if I can watch that again. And maybe that's a lot of people's experiences with it, just because it's fucked up. And, you know, the world has enough sadness. But, you know, if you get past the first, like, 15, 20 minutes, you'll be fine. You'll see it's all worth it. But it is asking a lot and doing a lot itself. So it's pretty heavy and it's very real. And it's very much an American problem that doesn't feel like it's going away ever. So I can't imagine what it's like for kids to go to school now, because even when we went to school, it was a thing, but not... I don't feel like it's been a thing like it is now.
Not
ever since maybe 2012.
It's like exponentially grown, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty bad out here. And I just, gun violence and living in Texas, like, yeah, you know, it's sad. But the movie itself, 5 panuzas, it was perfect. It was amazing. All these actors, the writing, wow. Also kind of unwatchable. But, you know, watch it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be different for everyone. I think, like, it's kind of like a metaphor on itself, right? Those that are able to watch it a lot and like relate to it, they do so in the same way that Veda wants to be around other people who experience what she's experienced. So it's like,
yeah.
if you're grieving, like, this is either the last movie you want to watch or like the only thing that makes you feel normal. So
yeah,
made me feel normal, I guess.
I might watch it when I'm less depressed one day, but. Yeah, just mentally where I am, I'm not going to watch it anytime soon, because I'm just like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm ever less depressed one day, and I, you know, to get through the whole thing, because it's just the first maybe 15, 20 minutes that are going to really bother me, and if I can make it through that, then I can enjoy the rest of the movie, because it is giving you what you need after grief, you know? It's giving you a hug, basically. And yeah, that 5 panuzas, I really love that movie too. It's really good.
It is, yeah. It's definitely a gem, and it's an incredible way to start off 2022 for films. So I don't know how anything's going to catch up, but good luck to the rest of y'all.
I want you to know, I watched Spencer and I really liked it.
I saw all your tweets, yeah. you know, I just knew that I should have known that it wasn't going to be for me. I just don't like those fever dreamy movies.
Like it's a movie with no plot. Like it has nothing to do. I mean, it's pretty, and Kristen Stewart is acting her ass off. So that was enough for me. Like, I was like, she's acting, and I love anything to do with Princess Diana. So
I usually do too. Yeah, it was definitely a new take. That's for sure.
Definitely. It's like fictional take on something that's... on Princess Diana, of all things. Like, they just made it horror, and I can dig that. I can dig rolling around in the fiction, you know, because there's so much nonfiction out about Princess Diana and the crown, you know. So I like this. It's just play, you know, it's just play imagination with real characters. Fuck it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really liked it. It was good. I would watch it again. Just for vibes. Because that's what the movie is. Just vibes. It's vibes.
I'd never watch something again. You couldn't pay me.
Yeah, I would do it. Like, I wish someone would pay me. I'd love that. Like, pay me to watch it. But, yeah, great movie. Loved it. I hope she wins an Oscar. Because my girls got snubbed from Passing. I'm going to talk about it again.
Okay.
No, you don't think so? Okay.
I mean, I thought they got snubbed. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. But I just don't trust the Oscars. So,
oh no,
you know,
who does anymore? Yeah, I'm probably not gonna watch them. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, but well, anyways. Shout out to all of our Patreon listeners who have been supporting us, even though we have been struggling to post lately. You guys got a Patreon episode last week that was us talking a lot of shit about a lot of things. Actually, like, you know, pretty fun, interesting episode. If any of you are members of our Patreon, go check it out. It's a good one. It's funny, I think. If I remember correctly, it was a good time. A lot of blabbering.
I don't remember what we talked about, but I had fun.
Talked about a lot of shit, yeah. So yeah, if you want to support us on there, the link is in our website, on our bio, on our, you know, probably it's anywhere that we are present. So go check that out. Go check out our merch if you want to support us that way instead. Go leave us a free review on Apple Podcasts or five star on Spotify. You know, there's a bunch of free ways to support us. You can follow us at CYC Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. However you prefer, you know, whatever your poison is.
Yeah. Tell your mom, tell your daddy, tell your sister, tell your granny. Tell everybody to come follow us.
All right, guys. We'll catch you hopefully in a couple of weeks.
Yes. Bye, guys.
Bye.